Welcome back to Moments Peace. Today, I'm with my friend and mentor, Janet, and she is going to talk to us today about all things scholarships, college tours, prepping your kids for college while homeschooling. So, hey, Janet, thank you so much for being on and talking about something that usually terrifies everybody. And I think that's why there's so much of a paralyzation of like high school and college prep and everything. But you have three who have successfully gone to college, a fourth one on the way, which has to be kind of weird, right? Like coming to the end of your journey a bit. So if you could just give us a recap of your kids' ages and what they're doing currently and where they've maybe graduated from, if you're comfortable sharing that.
So I have five children. The oldest two are twins and they're 24. My daughter went to Liberty University and graduated, actually got married just before her senior year. So she graduated 8 months pregnant, which is kind of a fun story. I never thought when I dropped her off at college that she would be 8 months pregnant walking across the stage, but she was married and had been for a year. So that was kind of fun, but she went to Liberty and loved it there. Her twin brother, Noah, is 24 also, and he went to Covenant College in Georgia, beautiful school on the top of a mountain. Had a wonderful experience there, and he's now getting his PhD, and so he can obviously continued his education long beyond college. And then my 22-year-old is at Regent University right now. He started off at Grove City College and then transferred to Regent, so we have one of those stories about transferring. And then my senior in high school is applying right now, and he's currently applying to Liberty and Regent University and possibly to Patrick Henry College. Okay. And then I have a ninth grader, so we still have some time before we have to think about it with him.
Awesome. So I'm just going to ask you some questions that are pretty common that we've also received to ask for help. Sure. So the first would be any tips on applying for college? Like, when do you start the process? Just any tips that you have that would be helpful in that process?
Well, I would say you really need to start thinking hard about it the junior year, for sure. The reason being, it's best to visit colleges, we have found, at the end of your junior year. Because senior year tends to be busy, and also the beginning of your senior year is really when you start applying to colleges. And so if you want to do some visits, we have done them and had and found that doing them the previous spring was the best way to do it. So what was the next part of the question?
So the other question would be like, so when it comes to essays and the application process.
Oh, the application, that's right. So every school is different with their application process. And we found that some schools have a really quick and easy application process and some are much harder. It really depends on the school. So Liberty University, for example, was pretty easy. You did have to answer a couple of short questions. They were not long essays, really about yourself. And so like what your faith journey. So those were not, didn't take him very long to do, or my daughter. And then the one at Regent University was even easier. I don't think there was a single essay question on that one. They just wanted to know your name and where you live and your GPA, and those things. So that was really easy. Patrick Henry College, my kids, a couple of them have applied there. That is a much more involved application where you have several essays to write. You have to get recommendations from various teachers. And so it just depends on the school. My kids have all applied to Christian school, which I'm grateful for. But I do have many students that I have coached and taught who have applied to state schools. And I get requests to write recommendations for them a lot. And so I have seen a little bit of that process, even though my students have not participated in that. And so a lot of them do something called the Common App, Common Application. And so that is a process where you have to get recommendations and make sure to do those in plenty of time. I did have one son who made the mistake of asking for a recommendation 4 days before it was due. And he got a no from the person. So it was like, that was a good lesson learned. You need to give a person at least, I would say, a month to write your recommendation. And so that's why you really need to start your junior year looking at the colleges you're interested in, visiting them, deciding where you want to apply, so that in the fall, you've got all your ducks in a row and you can get those details knocked off before you're up to the deadline. So
how would you narrow down your choices? So I have heard of some families that are like, we will choose only regionally, mm-hmm. some other only Christian because they only want to pay for a Christian education, mm-hmm. and other ones that are like whoever gives us the most money. So how do you prioritize that?
Yeah. Well, it's a couple of things. First would be, what do they want to do? Unfortunately, a couple of my kids didn't have a clue what they wanted to do when they entered college. So that makes it a little more challenging. In those cases, they picked a school where it had an abundance of majors to choose from. That way, if they changed their minds, they weren't stuck in only humanities or only science. You know, they could go either direction. My daughter wanted to be a nurse, and so she does have her BSN, and that narrowed down her choices significantly. She wanted a Christian school, mm-hmm. BSN. So there's not very many choices. Right. So she applied to Liberty, Cedarville, in Ohio. And I think there was one more, but I can't remember what it was. And she loved Cedarville, but Liberty gave her more money.
Okay.
So I think if she'd had her choice, she would have gone to Cedarville in Ohio. But when it came down to the dollars, we looked at the dollars and said, okay, here's what it's going to be. So the way we've done it with our kids, and I've had a lot of people ask me this, every family does it differently with how they pay for college or if they help their students at all.
Right.
The way we have done it with our students, and it's worked well so far, is to say, you get whatever scholarships you can get, and then we will pay for half of whatever's left. So it behooves them to get as much scholarship money as they can because it helps them and it helps us if they get good scholarships. But we're also helping them through the process. My parents helped me. And so, and my husband's parents. And so we want to give that back to our kids too. We want to kind of help them finish the education that we helped them start. So,
A great thing about, your story, is two points I want to make. One is your kids picked, okay. So like Covenant College, you guys aren't covenant believers in that sense, as far as theology goes, but they chose that.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's done great. And he also found his spouse there, which I'm not sure if she's totally covenant or not, but, interesting choice.
Yes. So they still attend a Presbyterian church. Mm-hmm. And so he chose that school because he wanted to major in philosophy. So that's a tricky one. Of course, we were like, really? Philosophy? Are you going to be able to eat, get a job? But he really, truly was, this is what God assigned for him to do. And I could get into all that, but I won't. But there's no doubt in my mind at all that this is what God made him to do. And like, he's pursuing his PhD in that right now. But he chose Covenant, and he was actually really smart about it. He said, I need to go to the school where the mentors who are there are going to be who I want to mentor me, mm-hmm. to get me where I want to go. And so he looked at a number of schools. Actually, there's not a lot of Christian schools that do philosophy as a major anymore. For example, Patrick Henry College is a philosophy school. Like I'm sure that all they do is talk about philosophy there, but they don't have a philosophy major. And he really wanted to major in philosophy. So he chose Covenant for the reason that they had the major, and they had only two men in the whole department, but he absolutely wanted them to mentor him. And they have been tremendous helps to him even still. He's still friends with them to this day. They write him recommendations, and he used to get together with them. So that was a great choice for him. And we have said to our kids, we will pay for Christian school. Okay. We do not tell you that you have to go to Christian school. But if you want to go to NC State, that's fine. But you're paying for that. and I don't know, people might have different opinions about that, but we have just thought, we want to be good stewards of our money, and we're very aware of what's going on in higher education, and the agenda that's there. And it's even in Christian schools.
Yes.
So don't think for a minute that Christian schools are a 100% safe place, but at least you're finding a school, hopefully, that has professors that sign a statement of faith and are in alignment with, your views generally. And so that's kind of what we did with our kids, but we were also careful about which Christian schools. And so we helped them see, for example, my alma mater, which I won't name, doesn't work for us anymore. We're like, no, we wouldn't send our children there anymore. We might as well send them to a secular school if we're going to send them there. And so, we kind of helped them see that, but we gave our kids freedom, but also some with boundaries. Like, we'll help you pay for a Christian school, but we're not going to tell you can't go to a secular school. It's your decision. As far as where to go. We did, the kids did decide, well, okay, there's a school out in California and there's one in Texas that has what I want, but do I really want to have to fly back and forth? And so we talked about all the pros and cons with them of traveling and having to get home for vacations and things. And so, like, I remember Noah, my 24-year-old, he drew like an 8-hour radius map. He's like, 8 hours is pretty good. So he drew an 8-hour map around us and said, I'm gonna look at schools inside this box here that meet all the other criteria. And so that's what he did. And he chose Covenant, which was almost, actually, I think it was about 8 hours away. So those are some of the things that we use to help choose a college.
And then can you talk about Ben's transition between one college to the other and what carried over, what didn't? Did he have to start all over?
Yeah. So Ben started at Grove City College, and it just it didn't go as he planned. It was not a perfect fit. And so he decided to transition to a different school. But by the time he decided, the on-campus housing was closed. So this is another reason to, you know, really think ahead, because the deadlines are earlier than you think they are. It even surprised us that the deadline had passed for that. And so he ended up coming back home and doing classes online from home, which was kind of a difficult transition, because once he's been off at school 2 years, kind of independent, coming back home, but we just kind of let him do his thing. He's got a car, so it's all working out. But he's going back on campus, hopefully in January, so that he can pick up on campus.
And he'll be finishing in 2 years or 1 year?
Well, probably like a year and a half, yes. He would. So he's a junior right now. Okay. So
he's almost at the end of the line too.
He is. Yeah. Wow. He's coming close. He's got all his core classes done. He's got some more, he's doing cybersecurity. So he's got some more computer classes to finish. But yeah, probably about another year and a half is what I would guess.
And did you guys do scholarships with that transition too?
Okay. Well, that's a good question about that. And there was something else I was just going to tell you about him coming back home. But anyway, scholarships is a whole nother topic. The best way to get scholarships is as an incoming freshman. Okay. So transferring is difficult because there are not as many scholarships. So it was a difficult transition for him. He lost some of the scholarships that he had at the first school, and the second school, Regent, he had been offered scholarships at that school as a freshman, but now that he's no longer a freshman and a transfer student, he's no longer eligible for those. So that hurt a little bit. But it's a less expensive school too. So it's doable. And the online cost has not been very much. But there, when he does go on campus, he will still get something they have called a homeschooling scholarship, which will take, I don't know, a couple thousand dollars off of his total price. So there's a little bit there for transfer students, but not nearly as much as when you're an incoming freshman.
Okay. So that really is the biggest year. Is that freshman year, knowing what you're coming in.
Right. And so you really want to apply for those your senior year of high school. And a lot of them, the deadlines, for example, my senior in high school right now is applying for a big scholarship at Regent University. And the deadline is October 15th, which I think is that today? Today or 15. Yesterday?
Yeah, 15th. Yeah, yeah.
So, so it's early. And I have known a number of kids who have missed the deadlines because they thought they had time. You know, it's only October. What do you mean I missed the deadline for the scholarship? So that's another reason you really got to, if you're thinking of academic scholarships, to start thinking about it your junior year so that you're ready to do those applications in the early fall of your senior year of high school.
So would you say finding the scholarships first and then, well, narrowing down your school.
Narrow down the school.
Then
apply to the school and get accepted.
And then you would say it's scholarship time.
Right.
And you start with the school stuff first.
Right.
That what they offer. And then do you know of or have you used any scholarships outside of what the school has offered?
We have. But I'll say this. The biggest scholarships you're going to get are the institutional scholarships, the ones that the college offers. And that's because they have endowments. They have money set aside to really attract certain kinds of students. And so the biggest money tends to go to academic scholarships, but there are also sports scholarships, various extracurricular activity scholarships. And so that's the biggest scholarships that you're going to get. But we did pursue, the older kids pursued outside scholarships and did get several thousand dollars to add to their funds, which was great. My kids have done essay contests. They did public speaking contests because, believe it or not, not very many students want to compete in public speaking competitions because they're afraid. But if you do NCFCA, which we talked about in an earlier session, if you do speech and debate in high school, you've got a leg up because it's no problem for you to show up and speak publicly in front of people. And so they've gotten some scholarships from that. So like Ben, I think, got $4,500 total in outside scholarships, but that was over multiple competitions that he participated in, both essay contests and speech contests where he had to go and deliver a speech. Whereas the institutional scholarship could be full tuition, which is a lot more than that. So if you have a student who's academically gifted, you definitely need to be on top of the academic scholarships that are institutional first. Find out what does that school offer. And sometimes it's hard to find. They don't advertise it real big at some schools.
So what is the best way to find out? Like calling?
Call the school and ask. Talk to someone in admissions and ask them. Sometimes it'll be right there on the website, but sometimes it's not. Okay. And so we have learned that the hard way, that we missed some really great opportunities that just were hard to find on the website, but someone had heard about it from word of mouth. So, but definitely call the school and ask, you know, are there scholarships for whatever it is, academics, for swimming, for basketball, for, you know, whatever, and they'll point you in the right direction.
So I was thinking about how you brought up speech and debate. Mm-hmm. Speech and debate, they love to see on transcripts, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And now you said there's scholarships also wrapped up in that. And it also can count as an English credit.
Yes.
So you can get a lot out of that one activity and it really propels them. Forward in that. Mm-hmm. So how big of a role does the ACT and the SATs really play in scoring and all that with college applications and scholarships?
Unfortunately, huge. Unfortunately, a huge role. So we discovered this with my older kids and I just could not believe it because, you know, as homeschoolers, we didn't give a whole lot of tests to our kids. We just knew what they knew. So I couldn't believe that so much was riding on this one test score, but some of the biggest academic scholarships are tied to the GPA and the standardized test score. Okay. So I know since COVID, some schools say you don't have to submit a score. Definitely submit a score. They're still looking at it for sure. So for example, Liberty literally has a chart of like a graph that you can look at that says, if you have this GPA range and this ACT range or SAT range, you'll get this much money. And they don't care about anything else. And so I was stunned by that. Like, really? And so they definitely look at that number. And I can tell you why. Colleges are businesses. Mm-hmm. See, this is something I had to learn from doing this as well. You know, people get real nervous. Is my kid going to be accepted to college? Your kid is going to get accepted to college. I mean, maybe not an Ivy League or, you know, like a really competitive school, maybe not if they're not, you know, don't have certain grades or whatever. But if your kid is not a complete cretin who failed out of school, there is a college that will accept them because they want your money. It's a business. And so as a business, they want to be able to advertise that they are attracting these top tier students. They want to be able to say our average ACT score at this school is, you know, 29 or 31 or whatever. And so that score helps to boost those numbers and makes them go up on these charts, you know, the US News and World Report charts, the Forbes charts. And so, you know, some people think it's like, oh, it's a privilege that I got into the school. You know, they let me in. They let me in. It's more that, you know, they're a business and they're going to take your student. It's just that they might not throw a bunch of money at them.
Right.
Because they're going to take your money. But if you are if you're a person who's going to help them to market their school because you have this high GPA and this high SAT score, then they're going to throw money at you because they want you to come not so much to get your money, but to have you as an advertisement for their school. Does that make sense?
Yep. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So that is one thing I wanted to talk about, because your kids scored extremely well. Like all of them that went to college did that, scored well. So how?
With much effort.
Okay. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Much effort.
So because you have more of a Charlotte Mason mm-hmm. education, so they love to read. They did speech and debate. Mm-hmm. You guys are, you know, apologetic people. So you're mm-hmm. thinking critically, like kind of already ahead. Yeah. But how did you get them to score so well? Like what prep or resources or anything that you use
Yeah. Well, I'm a pretty resourceful person. And so when I found out that this test score was so important, I went, okay, we got to start trying this test. And I learned quickly that you can take the ACT or the SAT as many times as you want. Of course, you have to pay for it every time you take it. So you want to try to give it your best effort every time you take it. But they have something called a super score. So you can take the test over and over again, and they will take the best score from each section of the test to give you a top score. And that's the score that most of the schools look at that score. And so I had my kids take it as a baseline, and I won't say which kid, but one kid scored so low the first time this person took the test. I'm not going to say he or she. that person would not have been able to get into the community college. And so we were like, oh no, this is not good. And so we really just did stuff on our own at home. We didn't have the money to pay tutors and, you know, all of, because you can get tutoring, but it costs a lot. And so actually one of my students did do a little bit of math tutoring, and it didn't really help his score. And so what helped us the most was just at home taking practice tests. And so my husband would sit down with them, especially over the math and science sections, but really the math section, and help, because I'm not a math. My husband's the math guy.
And you're the English person.
Yes. Great match. but even with the other sections, I couldn't really help them a whole lot, except the English grammar stuff I was able to help them with. But the other thing that you can do is, I think it's twice a year when you take at least the ACT. I don't know how we've mostly stuck with the ACT, not for any particular reason. Just my kids they tried both and they tended to score better on the ACT. So we just went forward and stuck with that one. But I don't think there's one better than the other. But we did the ACT, and twice a year with the ACT, you can order along with your scores the actual answer booklet, like so that you can see which ones you got wrong. And the correct, what the answer was that you picked and what the correct answer was. And so we ordered those little extras. It was like another $20 or $25 to have that shipped to you after the test was done. And I would highly recommend, if you happen to sign up for a test date that has that option as an extra, to buy that, because my kids would get those back and my husband would sit with them and go through and say, ah, here's why you got this one wrong. Here's why you thought this was right, but it wasn't, because a lot of the ACT, SAT is trick. They're trick questions, some of them. And the one that looks right isn't, because you didn't think through it carefully. And so that's really mostly what we did at home, was just go over the ones that they got wrong on the tests that they did take. And then they took lots of practice tests, which you can find online. You can get a book of practice tests. And the other big thing that helped Ben, who's my 22-year-old now, was he watched YouTube videos on how to score well on the science section of the ACT.
Oh, wow.
And
I didn't know they had that.
Tremendously. There was one, I think it was the science one, actually. He had gotten, the highest you can get on the ACT on any section is a 36. And I think he had gotten a 28 or something the last time he had taken the science section, and it was one of his lower scores. And so he really worked hard on that, and he watched the science video the night before, and he got a 36 the next day.
Oh, wow.
On the science section. I was like, are you kidding me? He said, it was that YouTube video, Mom. I said, you're kidding me. Spent all those hours, and it was the YouTube video. Wow. So there are little, short YouTube videos that give you tips and tricks on how to take them, and I would recommend those as well as a cheap option to help you prepare.
And so for those of us in the Triangle area, did you go to the public school and they sat and they did the testing there for the day?
Yeah. My kids have done it at Heritage High School and at Lewisburg High School, whatever one was available for when they wanted to take it.
And you just kind of look those up when it's listed?
When you sign up for the ACT, you go to the ACT's website, and at the end of the registration, it asks you which location. You put your zip code in and it says, which location would you like? And it pops up all the locations that it's available on that date near you. Mm. So I had maybe five choices, but it was like Heritage High School, Lewisburg, and then some in Raleigh. And we just picked the one closest to us.
Nice. And they just studied up until that point. And then that day,
Showed up that morning. We dropped them off at the public school, which was weird.
That has to be weird. Yeah.
After homeschooling all this time, we're dropping you off at public school today, hon. And they just went in, took the test. We came and picked them up a few hours later, and done was done.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that, because that is a lot, I think, of what people get freaked out about when it comes to college admissions and all that.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up the whole college thing, there is the whole transcript side of stuff. So when you apply, you don't submit your transcripts right away, right? Like at the when they're still selecting?
You do, actually. They want a preliminary transcript.
Okay.
And so, and actually your application isn't considered complete until they get a copy of your preliminary transcript. So this is something that I think every homeschool mother is terrified of. And I was too. And then I did it and went, oh, that was so easy. And I'll tell you what I did. There are dozens of online transcript maker things out there. And we picked one that someone told us about called transcriptmaker.com. It's actually run by a former homeschooler. And so I went to that website. It was cheap to get a subscription. There's multiple subscriptions you could get. And you literally just go to this website and put the information in. What was the name of the class? What grade did they get? And it automatic, and how many credits was the class? In high school class, a typical high school class is one credit. Electives are half a credit. And so you put all that information in. It has all these little drop-down boxes, and it literally calculates the GPA for you, both a regular GPA and a weighted GPA, because some, you know, I have to do math, a weighted GPA. It does it for you. And so I'm not a math person, and that was amazing that I could just – so now transcript to me is like no big deal. Right. I just go in, I put their name, address, you know, and it makes it pretty too. You just input the information, and it – spits out this pretty transcript that looks like you spent hours on it.
And there would be just, or from what I was told, was like you just put a projected graduation date.
Yes.
For that.
And right. Then, anticipated graduation date is what it will say. And you just pick a date that you think they might graduate. Because then you will have to submit a final transcript once they have finished high school, before they actually go to college. That summer, they're going to want you to send an official one that has the actual graduation date at the top that's signed by the administrator, which is, you know, me or my husband. And we've never had any kind of issue with a homeschool transcript. No one has ever asked us to certify it or explain how he has an A in this class or what books did you use or who taught the class. Like, no one has ever wanted to analyze his transcript. I was very nervous about that.
Right. And a lot of people get very skeptical about it because, oh, well, it's the parent doing this or, you know, but some kids do dual enrollment. And for those of us who like just did our own kids' transcripts and taught them primarily, really their SAT scores are going to be evident when they have, you know, it's going to match.
Yeah. The standardized test, the ACT and the SAT scores definitely legitimize the transcript somewhat. Also, if you do take a dual enrollment class, that can legitimize it, or an AP level class, that can legitimize it. But like I said, I've had students who didn't do any of that.
Right.
And no one has ever questioned me on that. And I really think probably in the beginning, I'm guessing that they did that more.
Right.
But homeschoolers have made a name for themselves in higher education.
Right.
Homeschoolers do so well in college that now colleges are getting smart and starting to recruit homeschoolers.
Right.
Not that everyone succeeds, but by and large, you know, homeschool students do very well. Mm-hmm. And so now I think they just say, oh, a homeschool student, and they actually see a good thing.
Right.
Not a, ooh, I better, you know, analyze this and make sure this is legit.
Right. They now see it as an investment.
Right. So we are enjoying the fruits of
the laborers
before us who did
that,
you know, who really faithfully fought and educated their kids well. And now we're reaping the benefits of that.
And so would you say college prefer subject or years? Like, you know,
years. They tend to prefer years is what I've been told. No, that's hearsay, I'll admit. But again, the school will tell you what they prefer. I did know a friend who turned in a transcript by year, and they said, could you please send us another one by subject? But that was very unusual. So,
yeah, because I think when we checked Reformation Bible College, they were like, no, just send them by the year. It's fine.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So that was.
We've always done ours by year.
Yeah, that's what we've been doing too. Yeah. So with transcripts, did you update it like every single year? Did you just wait towards the end? I mean, I know this is kind of like a...
Now I do it every year. So I made the mistake with my first two of waiting till the summer before their senior year to put a transcript together. And that was a nightmare because I had to go back and try to remember
everything from freshman
and
year.
Go back yeah. through my records and say, wait, was that first semester or second semester that you took that class? Not that that really mattered, but wait, did you take logic your freshman year or your sophomore year? And so we're having to go back through and remember. And so I learned from that mistake. And now at the end of every year, I go in and update what my kids have done and the grades that they got. So I'm not having to hunt through all my records for that.
And I guess while we're talking transcript, it would be a good to help those out there when a kid, because this is common. Mm-hmm. What about when they're doing high school level in seventh and eighth grade? How do mm-hmm. you put that on there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually, if they do an eighth grade class, I just put it on the ninth grade year.
Right.
That's what I've done. I did call a school once to ask them that. And they told, this one school told me to do. So I said, okay, we're just going to do that from now on. So.
And that's what I heard is very common, even because, I mean, we know we have a common friend whose their son finished calculus like by 10th grade.
Yeah.
So it yeah. was kind of like, right. you know, she had to spread it out on right. his transcript right. just for it to make sense because
right.
that's not the norm.
Right.
But that's what happened for yeah. him. So is yeah. there any do nots that you would not put in a college application or transcript? Like,
The only thing that I did learn this after my twins went to school is that you should not give your children credit for a class that you're also going to use on a resume for an extracurricular activity, mm. if that makes sense. And so if it's an extracurricular, you keep it an extracurricular. So speech and debate through the years, we have alternately used for English credit or elective credit, or we've just used it as extracurricular if they had to, like so many credits already and we didn't need to put it on the transcript. And so that would be the only thing that I would say. I mean, obviously you want to be truthful. Right. Yes. That's number one. You be truthful on the transcript for sure so that you have integrity. And that would be all I can think of.
So real quickly, could you define weighted and unweighted, and then also when you're going, have you ever looked at a college online and then went in person? Was the experience completely different, kind of lined up? Did it help going in person and getting more of that cultural feel?
Okay. So. Well, first the honors and weighted GPA is based on honors level classes. So, you know, most of the classes my kids took in high school were just your regular everyday high school classes. But if you take an honors level class or an AP class or a dual enrollment class, that weights the grade. I'm not sure. I know that AP is higher than honors, like weights it more than honors, but I'm not sure about dual enrollment where that fits in there. But like I said, my little transcript maker, there's a drop-down box that says, was this a regular class, an honors class, an AP class, or a dual enrollment class? And then it calculates it for me. And so my kids did have a weighted GPA because they took either AP or honors level classes. And like those Apologia science classes.
Yes.
Those are honors level if they do the whole curriculum. So
what about the cultural difference between choosing college online versus actually being there physically?
Yeah.
How do you feel it was helpful? Not so
well,
helpful?
I don't know that we really had a big experience there. You have to go visit the school to really get a feel. We've used their websites, of course, to see what do they offer for majors and minors and, what's their class size and things like that. But you really get a feel for the school when you show up. And then we asked all those questions all over again anyway, because we couldn't remember the answers. But being there is really what gets it done. When my kids go to visit, they just get a feel for this is where I could see myself here. And of course we pray before we go and say, Lord, show them if this is the place for them. And we've had, our students have said, no, it's not for me. But this place over here, that is so for me. Like the mountaintop school that my son went to, Covenant, I was like, oh, he's not going to go here. It's a small school in the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain. And he said, this is the place for me. And it turned out to be a great choice. So
that's awesome. I do think that there's some fruit in that. And you would recommend the tours after application, before application?
Before, okay. For sure, before. Yeah, you don't want to spend your time on applications if you're not sure you want to go there. So yeah, if you can, I would definitely visit first.
Awesome. I think that's everything we got for transcripts and all things scholarships and colleges. But if you could look in the camera and like maybe encourage the mom who's afraid of high school, like what would you go back and tell your old self
or
what would you do different? You know,
I would encourage the mom who's afraid to not be afraid. We actually have a theme this year in our speech and debate club. Our theme is fear not. And I can't tell you, and this is for me too, we are so afraid of so many things, and God doesn't want us to fear. And when he calls you to homeschool, he equips you to homeschool. And that includes all the preparation for them to go to college if they are college bound. And so there's so many resources. If you don't know something, just ask somebody. And people are very willing to help. People helped me along the way when I didn't know what I was doing. And now it's a privilege to be able to help other people who have questions and pass that along. So nothing to be afraid of. All the things I was afraid of, I realize in hindsight, I didn't need to be afraid of. Not nearly as intimidating as I thought they were going to be.
Same here.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of like, I should have slept more.
And oh, yeah. Don't lose sleep over it. Don't lose sleep over it. Yes. Not that hard.
Exactly. It's just, it's a new and different, exciting season. And it's neat to have your kids become your friends and kind of be on the journey with them.
Yeah.
You know,
well, we're terrified we're going to screw it up. Like, we've done all this high school homeschooling and we're going to screw up all their chances at college.
Right.
Because we're just going to get it wrong. You know, we're going to mess it up. And it's really hard to mess it up. It really is. And even the colleges, if you make a mistake, they'll tell you, could you resubmit this or something? And so it's not the end of the world, even if you do make a mistake. But it's really not nearly as intimidating as it seems.
And what would you say has been your best memory or blessing or gift that you got from homeschooling through high school?
Oh, the friends that my kids have. I remember my high school experience, and I went to a Christian school, but it just is nothing like what my kids have experienced. And they have got – here's the thing about high school, and I think you can remember this too – that's where you really start making bonds with friends. You start to pull away a little from your parents and you start to care a lot more about your peers, right? Mm-hmm. So it was so worthwhile to continue to invest in the homeschooling, if for nothing else. There's a lot of other benefits too, but if for nothing else, then you can kind of not choose their friends, but have a say in the kinds of people that they're with.
Right.
And that all of my kids would tell you, all of them would say high school was awesome.
Right.
And I do not have, I can't say that for myself. And my parents put me in a good school, you know, like they were faithful and they spent money to put me in a good school, but even so, like they couldn't choose the kids at that school and didn't know the kinds of families if they had the same worldview we had. And so we spend our time as a family with other families like you guys that have a similar worldview that we do. And, that has just made all the difference. So that would be my encouragement.
It's a blessing, right?
It's a huge blessing. Yes. Huge. I never thought I could do it. Never thought I could homeschool ever, even little kids. But here I am, and I wouldn't do it any other way.
And I love hearing that from someone who has a degree and who has taught high school students. Like,
I taught high school. I have a master's degree, and I was absolutely terrified to homeschool my second graders. I was like, second grade, I can't do it. And I laugh at myself now, you know, because I look back and think, wow, I was really afraid and really just thought I was inadequate for the job. And God's grace, God's mercy. So.
And your daughter, is she afraid to homeschool?
No, she wants to homeschool. Mm-hmm. She wants to homeschool. I haven't asked her if she's afraid or nervous about it. That's a good question. I should ask her that. She's got a 2-year-old, so... But she's already said, keep your books, Mom. Keep your curriculum. So I want
to. That's got to be fun to have that next generation reading the same books you read with them.
And absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. So, because those are a treasure too, because you're a book collector as well.
Yeah.
For the good ones. But thank you so much for being here and talking us all about this and helping us navigate it. It's a big topic. And I hope that this has been a blessing to everyone else. And thank you for being with us. We'll see you next time. Mm-hmm.